Chapter 53. The fruit on the trees, to see how those properties are coming along. I laid a dry stick on the ground, and tried to bore a hole in it with another one, in order to carry out a scheme that I had, and soon I got an awful fright. A thin, transparent bluish film rose out of the hole, and I dropped everything and ran. I thought it was a spirit, and I was so frightened. But I looked back, and it was not coming, so I leaned against a rock and rested and panted, and let my limbs go on trembling until they got steady again. Then I crept warily back, alert, watching, and ready to fly, if there was occasion. And when I was come near, I parted the branches of a rose bush, and peeped through wishing the man was about. I was looking so cunning and pretty, but the sprite was gone. I went there, and there was a pinch of delicate pink dust in the hole. I put my finger in, to feel it, and said ouch, and took it out again. It was a cruel pain. I put my finger in my mouth, and by standing first on one foot, and then the other, and grunting, I presently eased my misery. Then I was full of interest, and began to examine. I was curious to know what the pink dust was. Suddenly the name of it occurred to me, though I had never heard of it before. It was fire. I was as certain of it as a person could be of anything in the world. So without hesitation I named it that fire. I had created something that didn't exist before. I had added a new thing to the world's uncountable properties. I realized this, and was proud of my achievement, and was going to run and find him, and tell him about it, thinking to raise myself in his esteem, but I reflected, and did not do it. No, he would not care for it. He would ask what it was good for, and what could I answer? For if it was not good for something, but only beautiful, merely beautiful, so I sighed, and did not go. For it wasn't good for anything. It could not build a shack, it could not improve melons, it could not hurry a fruit crop. It was useless, it was a foolishness and a vanity. He would despise it, and say cutting words. But to me, it was not despicable. I said, oh, you fire, I love you, you dainty pink creature, for you are beautiful and that is enough. And was going to gather it to my breast, but refrained. Then I made another maxim out of my head, though it was so nearly like the first one, that I was afraid it was only a plagiarism. The BURNT experiment shuns the fire. I wrought again. And when I had made a good deal of fire dust I emptied it into a handful of dry brown grass, intending to carry it home, and keep it always, and play with it. But the wind struck it, and it sprayed up and spat out at me fiercely, and I dropped it and ran. When I looked back the blue spirit was towering up, and stretching and rolling away like a cloud, and instantly I thought of the name of it, smoke. Though, upon my word, I had never heard of smoke before. Soon brilliant yellow and red flares shot up through the smoke, and I named them in an instant flames, and I was right too, though these were the very first flames that had ever been in the world. They climbed the trees, then flashed splendidly in and out of the vast and increasing volume of tumbling smoke, and I had to clap my hands and laugh and dance in my rapture. It was so new and strange, and so wonderful and so beautiful. He came running, and stopped and gazed, and said not a word for many minutes. Then he asked what it was. Ah, it was too bad that he should ask such a direct question. I had to answer it, of course, and I did. I said it was fire. If it annoyed him, that I should know, and he must ask, that was not my fault. I had no desire to annoy him. After a pause he asked, how did it come? Another direct question, and it also had to have a direct answer. I made it. The fire was traveling farther and farther off. He went to the edge of the burned place and stood looking down, and said, what are these? Fire coals. He picked up one to examine it, but changed his mind, and put it down again. Then he went away. Nothing interests him. But I was interested. There were ashes, gray and soft and delicate and pretty. I knew what they were at once. And the embers. I knew the embers too. I found my apples, and raked them out, and was glad. For I am very young, and my appetite is active. But I was disappointed. They were all burst open and spoiled. Spoiled apparently, but it was not so. They were better than raw ones. Fire is beautiful. Someday it will be useful, I think. Friday. I saw him again, for a moment, last Monday at nightfall, but only for a moment. I was hoping he would praise me for trying to improve the estate, for I had meant well, and had worked hard. But he was not pleased, and turned away and left me. He was also displeased on another account. I tried once more to persuade him to stop going over the falls. That was because the fire had revealed to me a new passion, quite new, and distinctly different from love, grief, and those others which I had already discovered, fear. And it is horrible. I wish I had never discovered it. It gives me dark moments. It spoils my happiness. It makes me shiver and tremble and shudder. But I could not persuade him, for he has not discovered fear yet, and so he could not understand me. Extract from Adam's diary. Perhaps I ought to remember that she is very young, a mere girl, and make allowances. She is all interest, eagerness, vivacity. The world is to her a charm, a wonder, a mystery, a joy. She can't speak for delight. When she finds a new flower, she must pet it, and caress it, and smell it, and talk to it, and pour out endearing names upon it. And she is color mad. Brown rocks, yellow sand, gray moss, green foliage, blue sky, the pearl of the dawn, the purple shadows on the mountains, the golden islands floating in crimson seas at sunset, the pallid moon sailing through the shredded cloud rack, the star jewels glittering in the wastes of space. None of them is of any practical value, so far as I can see, but because they have color and majesty, that is enough for her, and she loses her mind over them. If she could quiet down and keep still a couple minutes at a time, it would be a reposeful spectacle. In that case, I think I could enjoy looking at her. Indeed, I am sure I could, for I am coming to realize that she is a quite remarkably comely creature, lithe, slender, trim, rounded, shapely, nimble, graceful. And once when she was standing marble white, and sun-drenched on a boulder, with her young head tilted back and her hand shading her eyes, watching the flight of a bird in the sky, I recognized that she was beautiful. Monday noon. If there is anything on the planet that she is not interested in, it is not in my list. There are animals that I am indifferent to, but it is not so with her. She has no discrimination. She takes to all of them. She thinks they are all treasures. Every new one is welcome. When the mighty Brontosaurus came striding into camp, she regarded it as an acquisition. I considered it a calamity. That is a good sample of the lack of harmony that prevails in our views of things. She wanted to domesticate it. I wanted to make it a present of the homestead and move out. She believed it could be tamed by kind treatment, and would be a good pet. I said a pet 21 feet high, and 84 feet long would be no proper thing to have about the place, because, even with the best intentions, and without meaning any harm, it could sit down on the house and mash it, for anyone could see by the look of its eye that it was absent-minded. Still, her heart was set upon having that monster, and she couldn't give it up. She thought we could start a dairy with it, and wanted me to help milk it, but I wouldn't. It was too risky. The sex wasn't right, and we hadn't any ladder anyway. Then she wanted to ride it, and look at the scenery. 30 or 40 feet of its tail was lying on the ground, like a fallen tree, and she thought she could climb it, but she was mistaken. When she got to the steep place, it was too slick, and down she came, and would have hurt herself but for me. Was she satisfied now? No. Nothing ever satisfies her but demonstration. Untested theories are not in her line, and she won't have them. It is the right spirit, I concede it. It attracts me. I feel the influence of it. If I were with her more, I think I should take it up myself. Well, she had one theory remaining about this colossus. She thought that, if we could tame it, and make him friendly, we could stand in the river, and use him for a bridge. It turned out that he was already plenty tame enough, at least as far as she was concerned, so she tried her theory, but it failed. Every time she got him properly placed in the river, and went ashore to cross over him, he came out, and followed her around like a pet mountain. Like the other animals. They all do that. Friday. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and today. All without seeing him. It is a long time to be alone. Still, it is better to be alone than unwelcome. I had to have company. I was made for it, I think, so I made friends with the animals. They are just charming, and they have the kindest disposition and the politest ways. They never look sour, they never let you feel that you are intruding, they smile at you and wag their tail, if they've got one, and they are always ready for a romp, or an excursion or anything you want to propose. I think they are perfect gentlemen. All these days we have had such good times, and it hasn't been lonesome for me, ever. Lonesome? No, I should say not. Why, there's always a swarm of them around, sometimes as much as 4 or 5 acres, you can't count them. And when you stand on a rock in the midst and look out over the furry expanse it is so mottled, and splashed and gay with color and frisking sheen and sun flash, and so rippled with stripes, that you might think it was a lake, only you know it isn't. And there's storms of sociable birds, and hurricanes of whirring wings. And when the sun strikes all that feathery commotion, you have a blazing up of all the colors you can think of, enough to put your eyes out. We have made long excursions, and I have seen a great deal of the world, almost all of it, I think, and so I am the first traveler, and the only one. When we are on the march, it is an imposing sight, there's nothing like it anywhere. For comfort I ride a tiger or a leopard, because it is soft, and has a round back that fits me, and because they are such pretty animals. But for long distance or for scenery I ride the elephant. He hoists me up with his trunk, but I can get off myself. When we are ready to camp, he sits and I slide down the back way. The birds and animals are all friendly to each other, and there are no disputes about anything. They all talk, and they all talk to me, but it must be a foreign language, for I cannot make out a word they say, yet they often understand me when I talk back, particularly the dog and the elephant. It makes me ashamed. It shows that they are brighter than I am, for I want to be the principal experiment myself, and I intend to be too. I have learned a number of things, and am educated now, but I wasn't at first. I was ignorant at first. At first it used to vex me because, with all my watching, I was never smart enough to be around when the water was running uphill, but now I do not mind it. I have experimented and experimented until now I know it never does run uphill, except in the dark. I know it does in the dark, because the pool never goes dry, which it would, of course, if the water didn't come back in the night. It is best to prove things by actual experiment, then you know, whereas if you depend on guessing and supposing and conjecturing, you never get educated. Some things you can't find out, but you will never know you can't by guessing and supposing. No, you have to be patient, and go on experimenting until you find out that you can't find out. And it is delightful to have it that way, it makes the world so interesting. If there wasn't anything to find out, it would be dull. Even trying to find out, and not finding out is just as interesting as trying to find out and finding out, and I don't know but more so. The secret of the water was a treasure until I got it. Then the excitement all went away, and I recognized a sense of loss. By experiment I know that wood swims, and dry leaves, and feathers, and plenty of other things. Therefore by all that cumulative evidence you know that a rock will swim, but you have to put up with simply knowing it, for there isn't any way to prove it up to now. But I shall find a way then that excitement will go. Such things make me sad, because by and by when I have found out everything there won't be any more excitements, and I do love excitements so. The other night I couldn't sleep for thinking about it. At first I couldn't make out what I was made for, but now I think it was to search out the secrets of this wonderful world, and be happy, and thank the giver of it all for devising it. I think there are many things to learn, yet I hope so, and by economizing, and not hurrying too fast I think they will last weeks and weeks. I hope so. When you cast up a feather it sails away on the air, and goes out of sight. Then you throw up a claw and it doesn't. It comes down, every time. I have tried it, and it is always so. I wonder why it is? Of course it doesn't come down, but why should it seem to? I suppose it is an optical illusion. I mean, one of them is. I don't know which one. It may be the feather, it may be the clod. I can't prove which it is, I can only demonstrate that one or the other is a fake, and let a person take his choice. By watching, I know that the stars are not going to last. I have seen some of the best ones melt and run down the sky. Since one can melt, they can all melt. Since they can all melt, they can all melt the same night. That sorrow will come, I know it. I mean to sit up every night and look at them, as long as I can keep awake, and I will impress those sparkling fields on my memory, so that by and by when they are taken away I can by my fancy restore those lovely myriads to the black sky, and make them sparkle again, and double them by the blur of my tears. After the fall, when I look back, the garden is a dream to me. It was beautiful, surpassingly beautiful, enchantingly beautiful, and now it is lost, and I shall not see it anymore. The garden is lost, but I have found him, and am content. He loves me as well as he can. I love him with all the strength of my passionate nature, and this, I think, is proper to my youth and sex. If I ask myself why I love him, I find I do not know, and do not really much care to know. So I suppose, that this kind of love is not a product of reasoning and statistics, like one's love for other reptiles and animals. I think that this must be so. I love certain birds, because of their song, but I do not love Adam on account of his singing. No, it is not that. The more he sings the more I do not get reconciled to it. Yet I ask him to sing, because I wish to learn to like everything he is interested in. I am sure I can learn, because at first I could not stand it, but now I can. It sours the milk, but it doesn't matter. I can get used to that kind of milk. It is not on account of his brightness that I love him, no, it is not that. He is not to blame for his brightness, such as it is, for he did not make it himself. He is as God make him, and that is sufficient. There was a wise purpose in it, that I know. In time it will develop, though I think it will not be sudden, and besides, there is no hurry, he is well enough just as he is. It is not on account of his gracious and considerate ways and his delicacy that I love him. No, he has lacks in this regard, but he is well enough just so, and is improving. It is not on account of his industry that I love him, no, it is not that. I think he has it in him, and I do not know why he... Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.